We all have the dream of turning our ideas into wild successes, but sometimes our dreams turn into innovation failures. What are some of the flags that could indicate an innovation could be less than that market success? I'll be right back.
This is the Killer Innovations Podcast with Phil McKinney. Keep in mind that the information and opinions expressed in this podcast are Phil's and Phil's alone, and they don't necessarily reflect those of his past, current, or future employers. Now, here's Phil McKinney.
I've got a shocking revelation for you. Not all innovations become market successes. Are you shocked? Are you surprised? The press, the blogs, the analysts, the pundits, they all talk up some great innovation as being the thing, the next great thing that everybody should get behind, and they're predicting wild success. And years later, we can't even recall the name of that next great innovation that was being talked about. So what went wrong? There are lots of reasons why innovations don't translate into market success. Some under the control of the innovator, and some not. Now, over the years, I've had my successes and I've had my failures. And over that time, I've learned to recognize some warning flags, and these flags can help you in two areas. One, keeping yourself honest. Face it, you could be the problem for the success of your ideas. And two, to become alert to the risk if you are thinking about joining a team developing innovations. There could be something else that's causing or risk the success of an idea that's being worked on in that team. So, what are some of these flags? First off, innovating for awards and recognition. Now, I've seen this happen many times where a corporation puts together an innovation team, and what they're really focusing on is getting a lot of recognition from their peers in the industry to be tagged as being the innovator out there. It's not about awards. It's not about your peers. It's really about market acceptance, having an impact on revenue and the operating profit of your company. If you're not making money, why do it? If the customers don't see value in it, why are they going to pay for it? It's really about developing innovations that matter. Customer adoption should be the metric. So what's the flag? What's the statements that you're going to hear from team members or from management that you should be sensitive to? The flag here is that whoever you're talking to, they're focused on talking about awards. They talk about the awards they've won in the past. They've got the big hallway when you walk down with all of the awards coming from either Innovation Press or the Industrial Design or coming from the major publications, and that's what they're focusing on. They don't talk about the customer, they talk about the awards and the recognition that they've received. Next, meaningless innovation. Now, we've all seen this, and really it's about the fact that they are claiming to be doing a lot more innovating than they really are. And let's face it, what they're ignoring is that they're not addressing the three key questions. Now, the three key questions, just as a refresher for you, in case you haven't been keeping up on the podcast here lately. First one is, does this idea or does this innovation fundamentally change the customer's expectation? Two, does this fundamentally change the competitive landscape of the market? Or three, does this fundamentally change the economics of the industry? If you can't answer yes to at least one of those three, then why are you doing it? Why? And what ends up happening is they ignore the fact of answering those three questions, they ignore the fact of the need for sustained differentiation, and they develop meaningless innovation. They're just trying to be different to be different, whether it's a little, you know, doodad here and a little spiff there. And really the fact of the matter is that they're investing innovation with no hope of ever getting a return on that cost. Management's going to have a low tolerance for continuing to invest in innovation that doesn't get a return. So what are the flags that you're going to hear talking to somebody who's stuck in this meaningless innovation gap? What they're going to talk about really is about their innovation in exotic terms. Think about the wine expert trying to describe wine with the woody, fruity, you know, desert taste, which I've never understood. What they're going to talk about is they're going to try to create exotic terms about their innovation that have no meaning to the customer and no meaning to the market. They're struggling to find ways to describe the value of their innovation. If you start hearing those kinds of terms and you can't bring it back to really understanding the impact of the customer, then you could be caught up in this trap of meaningless innovation, which is really just to do it, just to be doing it. Next is non-user-driven innovation. Now, this is innovation that's driven by someone else in the delivery or the value chain that is not a customer. Some examples would be retail outlets. So you're selling a product to a retail outlet who in turn sells that product to the end customer. And you're getting your specifications from the retail outlet, not from the end customer. So you're trying to meet the retailer's objectives in hopes that they can in turn sell it to the end customer. And this could also be with distributors or key players that own a certain part of the value chain that you are solely dependent on, and therefore you have to work with them, and they take over control of defining to you what innovations matter to ultimately to the end customer. The reality is that you become too far away from the actual users of your product or your service. Never assume that those people can accurately represent what the market need is, what the customer need is. Continue to go out and talk directly to your customers and gather those requirements directly. What are the flags that you're going to hear in this conversation? Well, when you're talking to people who are caught up in this non-user-driven innovation model, is that they talk about satisfying the need of the requirements of a non-user, such as a certain retail chain requiring that you hit a certain price point for your product no matter what. So you end up cost optimizing your designs or adding certain features or functions or certain design of packaging, which helps them but delivers no value to your end customer. So be sensitive to the fact that if you're in a situation where you are using a non-user-driven innovation model, you are significantly increasing the risk of an innovation failure. Next is the any innovation as long as it's green problem. Now, I'm a firm believer of sustainability and environmental design when you're building products and services and delivering those to the customer, but it's not the starting point. Environmental friendly, ecologically focused design processes and manufacturing processes has to be part of the core process of building and delivering product. It's not the starting point. And this is where we kind of are getting hung up here lately because everybody's rushing to market with green or eco-friendly products, and that becomes the starting point of the delivery versus what is it the market really needs and how do you really create an environmental friendly, eco-friendly process of creating products, manufacturing products, delivering products, and recycling products. Now, what's the flag that you're going to hear with companies or individuals who are stuck on this any innovation as long as it's green problem? Is that it starts off with the word green or eco. It isn't about the product or the benefit the customer gets. It's all about environmental and eco. Next is innovation by committee. Innovation is a team sport. It's very hard for the lone inventor this day to take a product from idea through prototyping, through market delivery, and put it into the street for the customers to buy. It requires a team to come around an idea and ultimately deliver that. Now, my advice and my experience says that the team, though, has to be small, and management needs to maintain a light touch. It can't be this overpowering. It can't act as if it has a seat at the table as being part of the committee. It's how do you, as an innovation team, innovate and yet not get overpowered by having such a broad set of groups of people who believe they have an opinion. Or more importantly, the problem with innovation by committee is everybody thinks they own the veto vote on what is part of that product or what is not part of that product. So management has to be careful, light touch, and avoid the risk of intimidation. Now, what's the flag that you're going to hear if this is a situation that you're seeing where you're stuck in this innovation by committee, and particularly with a heavy hand by management? What you'll hear is things like, with each decision that's being proposed to the innovation team, there'll always be this preface of, but we'll need to check it with, you know, Mr. Boss. So every decision, oh, should it be green or should it be blue? Well, I think it's blue, but we'll have to check it with the boss. Should this be 4 inches tall and 5 inches wide? Well, I think that's the right size, but we'll need to check it with the boss. If you're hearing that, then you're stuck in a team that may not have or be self-empowered to make decisions and deliver the innovation, and you're stuck in a innovation by committee. Next up, what I call light speed innovation. Now, light speed innovation is really this unrealistic expectation of senior management on how fast innovations can be brought to market and have impact. Now, this is really driven by the fact that the average tenure of corporate executives is getting shorter and shorter. So when you have an executive that's relatively new to an organization, they want to be able to show impact. They want to be able to show that they've had change and they've had positive results to the business. Now, the problem is they have an unrealistic expectation of how long it really takes to go from idea through prototype to customer trials to delivering the product. And anybody who's involved in the innovation space is clearly focused on how do you shorten that innovation time to the delivery time. And the other thing is with these executives is they want to leave their fingerprints. They want to be able to show that they were directly involved and they can claim credit for the innovations that are being developed. So what are the flags that you're going to hear when you're talking with or you're involved in a team that is in this light speed innovation phase? And that is that you constantly hear from executives how fast can they make the change be made, and they need the change or they need this innovation or they need this product in time to show it to investors, to have it timed for a specific board meeting, to time it for a specific press event. It's not about when is the product going to be done. It is, here's an artificial date that's triggered by some stimulus, and the innovation must be done by that date. Now, dates aren't all bad. Don't get me wrong here. But the reality is that if you're innovating simply to make the impression on board, on the press, on your investors, management team then may have an unrealistic expectation and is simply using this innovation in order to keep a heightened sense of adrenaline, but also to be able to show that management is driving something that ultimately they hope will result in the end product. So you need to be careful, particularly with this unrealistic expectation. And last but not least is the copycat innovators. Let's face it, we're all under competitive pressure. We all watch our competitors closely. And there's always this pressure to respond when a competitor comes out with an advanced product, maybe one that's a little easier to use, a little prettier, better industrial design, better functionality, better service, cheaper price, more global reach, you name it. There's always something in there that the competitors are doing, and you're getting a lot of pressure to respond. Now, some leading companies basically want to respond by actually duplicating what it is the competitor did. You know, they say, do the same thing or do the same thing but better. You know, management is shocked, however, when the results don't come through. So if you fold under the pressure and you go off and you execute what management told you to do, which is do the same thing the competitors are doing, then just better. When the results don't show up, then they don't understand why. The why is the fact that if you're copying your competitors, you're not innovating. You're basically just sitting around and being a copycat versus really going out and trying to break new ground. And so in this case, if you're constantly trailing and therefore having a hard time getting ahead, take a hard look at your teams. Take a hard look at what you're doing. Odds are you're focusing on being that copycat innovator and really not breaking that new ground and going into that white space innovation that I've talked about in a previous podcast, where you can find that area where you're going, the competitors are not going, and you can establish that new territory. So what are the flags that you're hearing when you are in a group or you're on a team that's in this copycat innovation? Typically, you're going to hear management say, if it worked for them, it should work for us, or some variation of that. And again, if you hear that, that is a clear flag that management doesn't really get the overall value of innovation. In summary, I'm going to run through this list one more time. First, innovating for awards and recognition. Next, meaningless innovation. Third, non-user driven innovations. Next, innovate as long as it's green. Next, innovation by committee, my favorite. Next is the light speed innovation. And last are the copycat innovators. Now, what's the purpose of this list? The purpose of this list really is to give you some early flags that when you look at your own team, or you're being asked to be part of a team, or if you're an investor looking to invest in a team that's coming up with some great ideas and some great innovations, is to take a hard look. Ask yourself if you're getting any of these flags, because these flags are early indicators that that idea and that innovation is heading for failure. Now, it's never too late to turn the team around. You can change these flags. You can inject processes. You can inject training and skills and management controls, and actually, in some cases, management-less control over innovation teams. But be honest with yourself. Look at your own programs and look at these flags and honestly answer if any of these flags are putting any of your innovations at risk. This week's killer question is in response to a listener's request for questions specifically to help innovate services. Now, my assumption has been throughout the podcast that products and services are interchangeable. But after being challenged by a number of emails from listeners about the services side, I had to be honest with myself and recognize that in some cases, services are distinctly different. Services or products have some unique characteristics. One, they're typically hard to portray value. They're viewed mostly as being, an intangible. It's some kind of a service. You feel better, more responsive. If it's a consulting service, I feel better because I've got the right experts. But it's hard to make this into something that's tangible and that I can attribute value to. Secondly, is that services are typically tied to a relationship. It's a relationship, whether it's a brand relationship that you're having or whether it's an individual relationship where an executive has become impressed with you or one of your employees, and therefore that establishes that bond. They trust the person. They trust the brand. And therefore, it's hard to build that up, very easy to lose. And third, it's hard to protect from being copied. Services are very hard to create sustained differentiation. Anything you come up with, your competitors can come in and copy relatively easily with the right people and the right skill set. And last but not least, it's hard to differentiate, or at least the perception is that it's hard to differentiate in services. So in this week, we're going to focus questions on specifically on how to innovate in the area of services by asking some specific killer questions. So the first killer question is, what part of your service offering is underappreciated? What part of your service offering is underappreciated? And what part of your service offering is overappreciated? Overappreciated meaning that your customer attaches more value to it than it really delivers. And this is where you got to be honest with yourself. And the same thing is where does your customer underappreciate? And why? You need to look at this from the customer's perspective. And you need to be able to answer why for the entire list, for both why, what's underappreciated and what's overappreciated. And next, what assumption does your customer have about your service offerings? What assumptions does your customer have about your service offerings? Is there an assumption about how fast the service should be and how fast you're delivering it? Is it their assumption on where you can deliver the service? Is it only local or is it international? Is there some assumption on your service about how far you're willing to come on the service levels in your business? And what's the gap between what they need and what the assumption is on what it is you can deliver? And why do you think that assumption exists? So again, what assumption does your customer have about your service offering and why? Now here, this is where you're going to come to the idea generation. How many ideas can you come up with for each assumption if you wanted the opposite to be true? How many ideas can you come up with for each assumption if you wanted the opposite to be true? Now, when I say opposite, I mean the opposite for both the good and the bad. And the good and the bad helps you understand what are the critical components in the delivery of that service. So again, what assumptions does your customer have about your service offering? And how many ideas can you come up with for each assumption if you wanted the opposite, either good or bad, to be true? This week's closing thought is about services. Let's face it, the growing role of services is impossible to ignore. It's no longer enough just to be focused on a product. You have to have the services that wrap around it. Customers are valuing a differentiated experience. And in many cases, it's facilitated by services. And if you want your innovation to be a success, you need to innovate the service, not just the product. And in some cases, you may only have a business that just offers services, which is even more important. So again, if you want to innovate to be a success, you need to focus on the service. And Albert Einstein said it best. It is high time that the idea of success be replaced by the idea of service. Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. If you have feedback, comments, suggestions for future shows, please email them to me at podcast@killerinnovations.com. Also, feel free to post them in the show notes. You can go to killerinnovations.com, find the show that you're particularly interested in and you want to post a comment on, hit the comment button, and post your comments directly in the show notes. Also, join me in my LinkedIn network. You can send me an invite to podcast@killerinnovations.com. Please identify yourself as a listener to the podcast, as I get lots of invitations from LinkedIn, and I typically only accept them if I know that you're a listener to the podcast or you're directly somebody that I know. Also, many listeners may not know, but the entire archive of all the previous podcasts are available online. So visit killerinnovations.com. And the entire list of podcasts is shown on the lower right-hand side. You can also download the entire podcast archives from iTunes and from Dig and many other podcast sites. So go out there, find the sites. You can also search for past shows, search through the show notes, find shows that have topics of interest, and you can download anything back through the 3-year archive of producing this show. And in closing, I just want to remind you that creativity and innovation is a skill that you can learn, and a skill that you can practice and become proficient at. And the key is to practice each and every day. So turn off the podcast and practice. Bye-bye.